From India's largest newsroom, I'm Arun George, and this is the Times of India podcast.
On Monday, missiles hit a section of the Iranian consulate in Damascus. Among the dead pulled from the rubble, a high-ranking Iranian military leader.
It started with an Israeli strike on the Iranian embassy in Damascus on the 2nd of April. Iran promised to respond after two commanders from its Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps were among the seven people killed.
Iran launched dozens of drones and missiles directly on Israel's territory. U.S. and Israeli forces are in the skies trying to shoot them down before they can do any major damage.
On the 13th of April, Iran launched hundreds of drones and missiles against Israel. Israel said that 99% of the missiles and drones were intercepted with help from France, the UK and the US. Multiple nations, including the US, also asked Israel not to escalate the situation. Iran also announced that it wouldn't carry out any further attacks. But on the 18th of April, Israel launched its own attack against Iran.
Israel has initiated a retaliatory strike against Iran, according to a senior US official.
Iranian authorities played down the scale of the attack on the Isfahan region, which has a defense base and a nuclear facility. They also played down the extent of the damage caused by the attack. For now, an uneasy stalemate of sorts is in place. But what does this mean for the region, which has become increasingly more volatile since the Israel-Gaza war began in 2023? Will Israel and Iran stick to this stalemate, or is there more escalation on the cards? To decode this and more, we spoke with Talmiz Ahmed, who was India's ambassador to Saudi Arabia and is an expert on the Middle East. In a previous episode, he'd explained what could draw Iran into this conflict. So we asked him what it meant for the region now that Israel and Iran have directly attacked each other. We also asked him to explain why both nations seem to have settled for a stalemate and whether that's something that will last. We started by asking him how he viewed the Israeli strike in Syria, which started this conflict and prompted the attack by Iran.
How do you view this conflict which started with a strike in Damascus? How do you view that strike in Damascus itself?
The strike in Damascus was a very calculated initiative by Prime Minister Netanyahu. This was his cynical response to the pressures being mounted upon him, particularly from the United States. Biden himself had also stepped in and started talking about a ceasefire and humanitarian assistance. And then, towards the end of March, the US abstained rather than vetoing on a UN Security Council resolution. There was another thing that happened. There was an international outcry, this mass massacre that was taking place in Gaza. But at the same time, it seemed to have no end. And no strategic objective that anyone could see. So Netanyahu was facing this pressure. But at the same time, he had domestic issues. He's the head of a coalition that contains extreme right-wing members, and they are the ones who've been calling the shots in terms of his domestic policy vis-a-vis the judicial reform on the one hand, and the tough posture vis-a-vis the Palestinians on the other. His ministers have deliberately desecrated the Al-Aqsa Mosque and have encouraged militant settlers in the West Bank to kill as many Palestinians as they could. But he had gone along with all this. It is in this background that I believe that very cynically Netanyahu decided to shift the attention from Gaza and the Palestinians to Iran, knowing full well that Iran is the one button that will change everything as far as the Americans are concerned. And he was remarkably successful. The tone shifted. From 4th April, you see that the scenario has shifted completely towards Iran. The attack on the Iranian embassy was not condemned by a single Western country. The Security Council was not convened and no resolution was passed against this. It seemed as if the Western countries had bought the Israeli canard that this is not an embassy because people are sitting there planning attacks on Israel. This is absolutely specious because we know every embassy in the world has military officers and intelligence officers who plan certain things, you could call them dirty tricks, murders, assassinations, attacks, etc. They planned them. And it is not something shocking or astonishing. I'm sure that every American embassy and Israeli embassy do exactly the same. Therefore, this was an astonishing defense. It had no legitimacy whatsoever, and this should have been roundly condemned. But the kind of coalition that has now surrounded Israel and the United States does not allow for this kind of accommodation and understanding, and therefore the focus shifted to Iran entirely. This was a calculated decision on the part of the Israeli Prime Minister to shift attention from Gaza and the Palestinian issue, the humanitarian matter, the matter of the two-state solution, the ceasefire, the focus on hostages, all of that was removed from the agenda and the focus was Iran.
The Iranian response was to strike at Israel with a range of weaponry, including drones, missiles, and all of it was largely thwarted. By some estimates, almost 99% of it was thwarted. For you, is that also a sign of the lack of the capability of Iranian defense forces, or was it that the strike itself was equally measured in response?
The Iranian response was extraordinary. It was both measured and it was spectacular. Iran, for the first time in recent history, directed its firepower at Israel. They were primitive. The drones took several hours to reach. Again, many of the missiles were not only intercepted, they were meant to be intercepted. Everyone says 99 were intercepted. We forget that 7 missiles of a certain superiority and sophistication penetrated the Iron Dome and hit the very airport from where Israeli planes had taken off to kill the Iranian general in Damascus on 1st April. This is the crucial point. How you should evaluate this is in terms of a technology and capability demonstration. It is a warning to Israel that its misconduct in terms of the free hand that it has had in perpetrating assassinations across against Iranian targets and assets across the region, this will now be responded to. So it's a demonstration. And I think that they were remarkably successful. Whatever you may say in terms of the media campaign, the disinformation campaign that nowadays accompanies almost every major political and military event, the disinformation campaign tried to portray it as a great, a remarkable Israeli success. But another thing that you must note here, the reports have already come out that the vast majority of these interceptions took place not by Israeli forces, but by Americans. The other disinformation that you had is that Saudi Arabia and UAE participated trying to build this whole canard of Arab support for Israel despite the mass murder they have perpetrated in Palestine. That has also been very soundly rejected. The only country that intercepted missiles was Jordan, and that is those missiles that were going to fall on its own territory. So I think that this was an absolutely spectacular exhibition of capability and technology for which the Israelis were ill-prepared.
You had on the 19th an Israeli response to Iran, which is also said to have struck back at Iran. Neither side has really acknowledged it. And for now, there's this sort of stalemate where neither side seems to want to take a step forward and they seem to have stopped where they are. How long do you see this staying? Is it temporary or is this a sort of done deal?
You see, what has happened between Iran and Israel is actually a sideshow as far as the Gaza war is concerned. It is significant in terms of its strategic implications, but the main event in the region remains the Gaza war and the various aspects of Palestinian aspirations. What has happened between Israel and Iran is something, it is a chess game that each side played a certain move, made a certain move. The other side countered it. They then made another move. And they have now decided that it is a draw, that there is no checkmate in this scenario. What the Israelis needed to do, because Israel has banked on its strategic superiority consistently over the last several decades. The Iranian attack challenged that strategic superiority. Therefore, Israel responded. It appears low-key, but the message is given that Israel said, if you can penetrate and reach our territory, we too can do the same. They chose Isfahan because Isfahan has an advanced nuclear facility. It also has a major nuclear technology center. It has a major air base. They sent only 3 drones. Each of them was intercepted. But we know that it is a signal. A few hours later, they attacked Syrian targets as well, signaling that in the immediately at our borders also, we have a certain capability. And if you continue further, this tit-for-tat attack, things could spin out of control. I believe that no one in Iran, no one in Israel, and except a few hotheads, and no one in the United States wants a regional conflagration. So what we are now seeing is that with the counterattack by the Israelis, there is a draw as far as that sideshow is concerned, and we are back to issues connected with the Gaza conflict.
Okay, if we are at a draw, and we don't see this escalating or going further, but then how do you view the fact that Israel's allies kind of stopped it or kind of prevented it from carrying out bigger strikes against Iran? Was it really their success that kind of brought this draw then, according to you? Or, and more importantly, can they hold back Israel in the future in such, to prevent such conflicts?
You see, you have a complicated political situation in Israel. You have a prime minister who has lost all credibility as a leader of that country. He is facing criminal charges. If he were not prime minister, he would be in jail. But he is an extraordinary survivor. He has cobbled together the present coalition with some of the most racist and extremist and violent characters that you find in the Israeli political firmament. In the normal times, no serious politician, whether from the left or the right, would have touched any of them. But Netanyahu chose to put together this coalition with these people, gave them senior positions because he was desperate to be the head of this government. Everything that happens today in Israel is connected with the prime minister's personal interest and indeed his personal survival. Now, people said many things to him. Biden said certain things. He said, take the win and move on. But that is not acceptable. He's under pressure from his coalition partners. Ben-Gurion actually advised a massive assault upon Iran. And when the actual 3 drones went across, he tweeted that this was feeble or lame. And Benny Gantz has pulled him up, saying that Netanyahu should throw this guy out of his cabinet. You ask me how long will this continue? Very difficult to answer because you have this wily prime minister in power for a year and odd. He has escalated matters only for his survival. Have you noticed? He has no interest in the hostages. Those Israeli hostages, he shifted matters to Iran, thinking that is the button to press as far as the Americans are concerned. And Israeli hostages don't matter to him. Because if you were had a situation where there was a cessation of hostilities and a longer-term ceasefire, an exchange of hostages and prisoners, you would have a new political order in Israel. And I don't think Netanyahu would fit in there. Therefore, what will be his next step remains to be seen. I personally agree that he is a liability for his country. He is too much concerned about his own survival. And it is really time that the Israeli people finally had their say and were able to rid themselves of him.
You've spoken also in the past with us about how Iran has largely operated in the shadows against Israel. This has been a historical first of sorts. Has that sort of red line been crossed where Iran no longer operates purely in the shadows against Israel and now is also perhaps open to striking directly rather than through proxies?
Absolutely, Atay. The point is, Iran, in conventional terms, is obviously inferior in terms of firepower and capability as far as Israel and the US is concerned. I would say to you, frankly, that the strategic landscape of West Asia has changed fundamentally. The strategic superiority that Israel had celebrated for so long is now over. The Iranians have made it clear that till now we did not wish to confront you because we don't want a conventional war. And even now, I don't think they want a conventional war. But 6 months of the Gaza war have shown, number one, Iran's axis of resistance, the assets that it has in Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and Houthi, that they are a formidable force. They are united and they are led very robustly by the Iranians. This is a very powerful force to counter any Israeli threat. Till now, they had a free hand. The Israelis could go anywhere and assassinate who they wish or bomb any facility that they wish. That has now changed. Every country will need to take a fresh look at its conduct in the region. So that has changed, I think, fundamentally. Israeli politics will also have to take a fresh look. They have ignored the Palestinian issue. They believe you can engage with the other Arab countries, normalize ties with them without addressing the Palestinian issue. I think that canard has also been removed and you have to address the Palestinian issue. The third point is that the Americans thought that they could put together an Arab NATO, that they would have you. This was the Trump dream, which Biden and Blinken continue to pursue, that you can put together an Arab coalition of UAE and Saudi Arabia with Israel and the United States and confront Russia, China, and Iran. I think, and I believe this very strongly, that the China-initiated engagement between Saudi Arabia and Iran has held. I don't think the American efforts to break it will succeed. And I think that these major Gulf countries are asserting strategic autonomy. They don't want to be part of any US-led binary. They value their relationship with China and Russia, and they see extraordinary advantage in terms of their security and their interests and their economic and political interests in engaging with Iran and having substantial ties with Iran. I'm not saying the UAE will continue to have relations with the Israelis, but those are overwhelmingly economic and technological. Saudi Arabia is unlikely for the foreseeable future to normalize with the Israelis, whatever the Americans may wish for.
You know, you've spoken in the past about the risk of the Gaza war pulling in the other Arab nations because they can't ignore it. Given that the Gaza war is still on, and like you're saying, this binary led by the US cannot exist, how do you see things shaping up in the future?
Earlier, we used to be concerned about a regional conflagration because any attack on Iran was likely to lead to an Iranian response on the Gulf countries, particularly Saudi Arabia and the UAE. That is now over. The engagement that China put together between the Arab nations and the Iranians has held. And Iran has now signaled to the Israelis that they have the capability of doing damage to Israel if it comes to that. So I think the possibility of a major regional conflagration, I think, has abated. What you will now need to look at is how this war ends. Could we be at the edge of a major change in the region where Israeli leaders could start understanding some aspects of Palestinian aspirations, and instead of treating them with the contempt that they have exercised over so long, finally respect them as a people, understand their aspirations, and genuinely seek to accommodate over the near future at least some of their crucial aspects. This engagement of the Israeli government with an extreme right wing is an important lesson for us, that it serves no Israeli purpose, and I don't believe it serves any Palestinian purpose either. So here is where you need the opportunity. These Western nations led by the US really sang the Israeli song and ignored the attack on the embassy. I personally feel if they had spoken out harshly that this is not acceptable, maybe this escalation that we saw might not have occurred. I personally applaud that the Iranians used this moment for such a calibrated response that nobody could say that nobody was killed, the signal was given, and the technology demonstration was successful. Can the Americans now, possibly in Biden's new term, if he comes in, because I'm not sure what is Trump's posture going to be, but I don't need the Americans. You really need the Israelis and the Palestinians finally talking to each other.
There is an Indian element in this as well, because we have Indian sailors who are presently being held on board a ship by Iranian forces. We believe we have decent enough ties with Iran. Why do we have this sort of delay in their release then?
There is a war on. Let us accept that. The Iranians had made clear more than a month ago that far too many of their assets have been apprehended, you know, mid-ocean, on suspicion that they are carrying Iranian oil or what have you. Iran had already warned that they are going to stop vessels that are hostile to their interests. This is that, it's a manifestation of that. I believe that it is just an unfortunate coincidence that this particular ship happens to have 17 Indian sailors. I would argue to you very strongly that taking into account our close civilizational relations, Iran will treat these sailors extremely well, and they will come home sooner rather than later. One lady sailor has already returned home, and I believe the rest will follow fairly quickly. And she has reported how well they are being treated by the Iranian personnel.
Today's episode was produced by Jairaj Singh and Sahil Gupta. For a daily spotlight on people, ideas and stories that matter, subscribe to us. We're available on TOI Plus, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts and all other platforms of your choice. For any news tips, email us at toipodcast@timesinternet.in.